February is known for Valentine's Day, the season of love. My grandparents were one of many couples who chose Valentine's Day as the day to get married. My grandfather was very smart. Easy to remember that anniversary. Other couples celebrate the holiday with gifts of flowers or candy or romantic dinners. You know, there are many synonyms for love that exist. You know, affection, adoration, compassion, tenderness, and others. There's two other words that are often associated with love, and they sound a lot alike. It's the word sympathy and empathy. And for this month of February, I'd like to look into the latter of these terms as we seek to strengthen the skill of empathy. Throughout this year, we're going to look at sharpening our spiritual skills. And for this month of February, morning and evening, I'd like to look at empathy. How can we sharpen the skill of empathy? In our evening services, we're actually going to look at examples of empathy in the life of Jesus. What it looked like and how we can practice that ourselves. This morning, I want to begin with an initial definition of empathy. We need to understand what the word means. Now, most resources tell us that the word empathy entered the English from the German language. The word Einfühlung, I'm sure my brother Bob could say it better. Literally, it means feeling into. And it's very different, as we're going to see, from sympathy, which is feeling for. This is feeling with someone. Empathy is defined as the intellectual identification of the thoughts, feelings, and state of another person. Someone described it this way: it's as though we are in the driver's seat of the other person, feeling and seeing with them. It is viewing the situation through their eyes, feeling as they feel. Another defines empathy as discerning the other person's experience and interpretation from their vantage point. So it's not necessarily what I think, not necessarily what I feel about the situation. I want to get in touch with what they think and how they feel in the situation of their life. Now, this word empathy, it is a very popular word these days amongst the mental health field. Counselors are being trained to be empathetic. Even folks in the medical field are told the benefits of empathy. Christian counselor Norm Wright suggests empathy is a scriptural basic for counseling. Empathy is one of the most important commodities for effective counseling. The Bible tells us to bear one another's burdens, to rejoice with those who rejoice, who weep with those who weep. And that's what empathy is all about. There's a verse in the book of Hebrews, the last chapter of Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 3. Remember those in prison as if you were their fellow prisoners, and those who are mistreated as if you yourselves were suffering. That's empathy. It isn't, oh, I feel bad for someone because they're suffering. It's treat them like you were suffering along with them. Instead of viewing, he uses people in prison from our own thoughts and our own ideas about why they're there and whether they deserve to be there or not, or what we think of someone that's been convicted of a crime. Why don't you put yourself in their shoes? Why don't you look at it the way they look at it? Feel the way they feel. That is precisely what empathy is all about. Now, I mentioned earlier a definition that said that empathy is the intellectual identification with the thoughts and the feelings and the state of another person. But it's not just intellectual. There's also an emotional side to it, where we not only get in touch with how they're thinking, but how they're feeling. And again, it might be very different than our take on the situation. We may have a very different analysis or a very different reaction to what they're going through. But in empathy, we're trying to feel as they feel, not feel as we feel. Think as they think, not just think as we think. The emotional side of that sometimes is called affective matching or affective attunement. It's getting in tune with where somebody else is. It's like that old saying, walk in someone else's shoes. Put yourself in their situation. And the person who can do this, the person who can effectively empathize with another, is going to have a better chance to connect with them and to be effective. Bruce Parmenter, who for many, many years taught at Lincoln Christian College, University, and Seminary, he wrote, "Empathy may be the most powerful healing reality in any therapist, but I believe it's something that every Christian can develop, and we should. I think it's something we should all practice on a regular basis." Now, not only does empathy do something for the other person, it does something for you. One author put it this way, "Empathy is the plow that breaks up the hard ground of our hearts. The tenderness and compassion that follow empathy are seeds that sprout and grow until sworn enemies or sometimes surrender their hatred." It is so easy for us to observe the plight of another and become judgmental. We see something on television or read something in the paper, and it's like, they deserve that. Or maybe we wonder, I wonder what they did to deserve that. And our hearts can become hard. Empathy breaks through the hard heart and allows us to reach out and connect with somebody else. Tony Evans adds, "Empathy reminds us of our own humanity and helps us to allow space for another's place in life." Maybe some of you have experienced this. You're somewhere, maybe you're at a store, or maybe you're out, maybe it's at work or wherever, and somebody is really rude to you. Somebody just, they're abrupt, they're not very considerate, maybe they're short with how they respond to you, and that hurts you. I mean, that really bothers you. Maybe it makes you a little bit angry. Why would somebody treat me like that? But then later on in the day, you find out that that person just lost a parent. Or maybe their mate walked out on them. Or maybe they lost their job. Or they've got a test coming up that they're afraid of what the diagnosis might be. Now, that doesn't excuse their behavior, but it does explain it. And when that happens, have you ever felt differently toward that person? Again, not excusing, but empathizing. They're having a bad day. They're going through something really more than I can even imagine. Maybe that's why they are acting the way they do. That's empathy. So it is the intellectual and emotional identification of the thoughts and the feelings and the state of another person. I think it's a tremendous skill that every Christian can develop in their lives to relate to and at times help others. At the very least, it communicates Christ's compassion to them that you care. You care what they think. You care what they feel. And even if you can't fully understand it, you can at least relate to it. Well, next we're going to move on to an important distinction between empathy and a word that I mentioned earlier, and that is sympathy. They both sound the same, and in fact, they both come from the same Greek root, pathos. What is pathos? Well, according to Webster, pathos comes from the Greek meaning suffering, to experience, and then emotion. It means all of those things. It's related to a Greek pasco from which we get passion. And initially that meant to experience or to undergo something. You go through a situation, and that's the word that they would use. Eventually it became affiliated with emotions, feelings. And that's where in ancient world it became negative. You see, Greek psychology saw emotions as something changing, something very difficult, if not impossible, to control. Therefore, they saw it as a weakness. And so this word pathos, as it is used in ancient Greek literature, was usually in a negative sense. Philo, the philosopher, used pathos some 400 times. Almost every time relating it to emotions or feelings. And he called for, in the Greek, apatheia. You can guess what English word that comes from, related to. Apathy. The absence of emotion. Have you ever heard of someone being stoic? Right? You never can tell how they feel. They just always keep a straight face, never get too high, never get too low, never show their emotions. That's stoicism. That began in the Greeks, way back before the time of Christ. And that was considered strength. That also filtered into a Western idea of what a man is, right? If you're really a man, you don't show your emotions. Oh, no. Never let anybody know that you've been hurt. Don't let anybody know that something has touched your heart. Nope, you just keep a straight face and I'm strong. I don't know about strong, but that's the concept as it has been brought down to us. And this negative tone continues in the New Testament. We only find the Greek word pathos three times in the New Testament, all by the Apostle Paul, and it's all negative. You find it in Romans 1:26, Colossians 3:5, and 1 Thessalonians 4:5. In Romans, it's used to describe homosexuality. In Colossians and 1 Thessalonians, it's designated passionate lust. Not exactly a virtue for the Christian, right? So Paul uses that in the negative sense of the word. John MacArthur defines it as uncontrollable desires, compelling feelings, overpowering urges. Like the opposite of self-control that we looked at last month, right? And in the years following the New Testament, the early church fathers continued that negative use of pathos. It described everything from bad temper to adultery. Eventually, it took on the meaning of suffering and death, as we have come to understand the passion of the Christ. Passion being the suffering that he went through. Now you say, why does this matter? Do I really have to know this? Well, I believe it goes a long way to explain why the word empathy doesn't appear in your Bible. See, if you get a concordance and you go to E and you look up empathy, you're not going to find anything. It's not there. Why? Because in those days it was considered something negative. Now, you will find in the New Testament from time to time the word compassion. We saw it in our text this morning in Mark 6. Mark uses it, I believe, three times through his gospel, describing Jesus' reaction to something. He had compassion on them, but it's not the word for empathize. It's not even the word for sympathize. It's a totally different term. It's a term, spelunkna. I probably butchered that too. It's a Greek word, literally means bowels. What? What's that got to do with anything? All right. Think about our own culture. What is the predominant symbol of Valentine's Day? A heart, right? And what do we say to people that we really love? I love you with all my heart. Do we really mean that muscle in our chest that pumps blood through our body? Not literally. It's a figurative expression for our feelings, our emotions. All my heart. Well, back in Jesus' day, they'd say all my guts. Right? You feel something in the pit of your stomach. That's the word translated compassion. You feel it way down deep inside. Because they believed that the bowels was the seat of the emotions. Where they got that from, I have no idea. But that's just how it came down. So, in Mark 6, it says, Jesus had compassion on them. That's what our English says. In the literal Greek, it was, he felt it down to his guts. And that's the word that we sometimes see used in the New Testament. Now, you will find sympathia in a few verses. Hebrews uses it twice. 1 Peter uses it once. There it's in the verb form, sympathize, or to be sympathetic. But you don't see empathize used because, again, the word had a negative connotation in that time. Doesn't mean that empathy doesn't appear in the Bible. Just like the word Trinity. You can't find Trinity in the Bible, but you find the truth of the Trinity all through the Bible. So don't let that throw you that, well, empathize or empathy doesn't appear in the Bible, so it's not important. No, the concept is, just not the actual word. And this, again, comes back to this important distinction between sympathy and empathy. They sound familiar, they're derived from the same word, but they are not the same. Empathy we have described as the ability to understand, to relate to the thoughts and the feelings of another person. Sympathy is defined as feelings of pity or sorrow for someone else's misfortune. Have you ever been going through a tough time? And somebody comes along, and you can tell they feel sorry for you. How do you react to that? Doesn't sometimes it get under your skin? Oh, they just feel sorry for me. Oh, they pity me. You want to get a strange reaction from someone, go to somebody you know is going through a hard time and say, oh, I pity you. They're probably not going to like that very much. Why? Because pity oftentimes is condescending. We look down on someone. Oh, you poor person, you're going through that tough time. I feel so sorry for you. And it communicates, boy, I'm glad I'm not in your shoes. Glad I'm not going through that. Oh, man, that's tough. Wow. There's not a connection there. In fact, there's a disconnect. When somebody is just pitying someone, they're not relating to them at all. They feel for them, but they're not feeling with them. They're not understanding what you're going through, how you're thinking, what you're feeling. Empathy is much more comforting when you're relating to someone else's situation. Sympathy is described as two people who don't know how to swim trying to save each other. And oftentimes both of them will drown. Because there's not that connection. And what can really happen, and this is something when we're practicing empathy, we've got to be very careful about. that we don't allow our feelings and our thoughts to overwhelm the other person. How can that happen? This is what I think is the most often the case. So you're talking to somebody, you're finding out what's going on in their life, you're really being a good listener, and that's a good thing. And as they tell you what's happening to them, maybe how someone is treating them or what's happening in their life, we get mad. Right? If someone is mistreating them, we get angry. Trust me, your anger at that point does not help that other person. It can, in fact, make things much worse. So we got to make sure that we keep our thoughts and feelings in check. That we're relating to that other person, but we're not projecting our own thoughts and feelings onto them, because they've got enough to carry right now as it is. And really, that becomes a very selfish exercise, where I'm going to tell you what I think, I'm going to tell you how I feel, and it may leave them worse off than before. Be very, very careful in that. I'm not saying sympathy in and of itself is bad or wrong. I think it's just very easy for it to become judgmental, self-oriented. Here's another example. Maybe you're talking to somebody and they're listening to you and you're relating to them something that has happened in your life, and they'll say, "Oh, that's nothing. Let me tell you what happened to me." Right? That ever happened to anybody? You know, that one-upsmanship. "Oh, that's nothing." That's like the opposite of empathy, okay? That's what we should not be doing when we're lending an ear and reaching out to them. So where does this leave us? I want to conclude this morning with an implicit directive. It's implicit because, again, the word empathy doesn't appear in the New Testament, but we are called to empathize with others. Remember what empathy is. It is intellectually and emotionally relating to how somebody else thinks and feels. But it's not primarily emotional. We're not getting angry for them. We're not judging them, looking down on them. So where do we find an implicit directive in the Bible to show empathy? I want to begin with Romans 12. Romans chapter 12. It's a verse that I actually alluded to earlier, one you're probably familiar with, even though you may not know it's located here in the Bible. Romans 12 and verse 15 says, "Rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn." You say, well, that should be easy, right? Somebody's happy, we're happy with them. Somebody's sad, we're sad with them. But do you notice that that's not how we're made up? That's not our nature. You want an example of that? Think of a pair or a foursome that are golfing. I can relate to this. How do you feel when that other person makes a great shot? By nature, we're like, I wish I could do that. That should have been my ball. Now they're going to win. Right? That's our nature. We don't rejoice with them. We're looking at it as how it affects me in my game. Instead of saying, wow, that's a great shot. Can you really be happy when somebody else succeeds? Or is there a little bit of resentment that's down deep in us? If so, that's natural. Not saying it's right, but it is natural. Or on the other hand, when the guy shanks one into the water, and our first thought is, right? Okay? Come on. You can relate to that, right? That's our nature. By nature, we're selfish. We want that hole-in-one. We want that great shot. But, you know, they line up a 35-foot putt, and it goes and goes and goes, and it stops, what, half an inch in front of the hole. Or it curves around the outside and goes the other way. And inside we're going, yes. That's our nature. But Christ calls us to do the opposite. So that when they make that great shot, we can truly say, wow, that's a great shot. And when they do shank one into the woods, man, that's tough. That's really, man, that's tough. Especially when it happens multiple times. On the same hole, yeah, we've been there. Well, that's also in life. When you hear somebody is having a success, can we really rejoice with them? Can we really be happy for them? Or is there something inside saying, well, why didn't that happen to me? When something horrible happens, do we think, whew, glad that wasn't me? Or, wonder what they did to deserve that. Those are the opposite of empathy. We should rejoice with those who rejoice and mourn with those who mourn. Step into their shoes. Try to understand how they see the situation, how it makes them feel. Another verse is in Galatians chapter 6. Galatians chapter 6. In verse 2, Paul writes, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. Carry each other's burdens. Instead of just standing off, aloof, maybe a little bit judgmental, Paul says that we should carry each other's burdens. In the original language, each other's is the first words in the sentence. Each other's burdens let us carry. And it's the emphasis is on each other. And really, isn't that the point of the Christian life? Our life should be more attuned to others than ourselves. Carry each other's burdens. And the tense of the verb is present, meaning keep on carrying. This isn't just a one and done, occasional helpful act. We should live lives as helpful people, always ready to help somebody with their burden. Now, if you think about it, this verse kind of assumes that everybody has burdens, right? And we do. All human beings, we have burdens, and sometimes they're too much for us. God does not mean for us to carry our burdens alone. And I'm not just talking about going to Him with them. We should. But He's also put us into community with each other. He wants us to be able to rely on each other in those times when we can't do it ourselves. Now, again, that goes against our grain. You know, I'm an American. I'd rather fall on my own than stand with someone else's help. But that's not God's way. It's humbling to be able to admit, yes, I'm struggling. I can't do this. I need help. It's a very humbling thing to do, but it's a necessary thing. And when somebody is struggling, we need to help them carry that load. Those burdens in life, they can manifest in a lot of ways, physical, relational, financial, emotional. Think of yourself like a spotter at a gym, okay? You've ever seen somebody on the bench press, right? You know, they've got the bar and the weights and they're pushing it up and they'll keep adding more and more. Well, there's somebody standing over them so that if they get too much weight and it's down on their chest and they can't push it up off of them, that spotter will come in and help them lift that load. That's what empathizing is about. It's being there to help somebody in their time of need to get through that situation. So carry each other's burdens. Now, some of you may have, you know, gone for extra credit and read down further, and you see in verse 5, for each one should carry his own load. Say, wait a minute. I thought we were supposed to carry each other's. Understand, burden and load are two different words. Burden means a massive weight, whereas load is a military word. It's a backpack. It's a pack that a soldier carries into battle, and each soldier is expected to carry his own. So the idea is pull your own weight until it becomes more than you can handle, and then you help one another out. So there is a balance in this directive. One last directive we see comes from Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3, verses 12 through 14. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Those are very important qualities for somebody to show empathy. You're going to have to be patient with people at times. You're going to have to show kindness. You're going to have to humble yourself to be able to connect with them where they are. Bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. There's that word bear again. And here it's not bearing someone's burden, it's bearing with them. Sometimes that's a challenge. But the empathetic person does not allow even a person's less than desirable traits get in the way of connecting with them. Forgive. Why should I forgive somebody when they're rude to me or they're, you know, thoughtless toward me? Well, forgive as the Lord forgave you. That's a good reason. We've been forgiven. We should forgive. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Right there is a snapshot of what empathy is all about. It's personal. It doesn't always mean fixing the problem. Guys, we're really notorious for this, right? Wife comes and starts talking to us, and we just want to fix it. Fix that problem. And that's not what she wants. She needs somebody to listen, to empathize. I see a lot of elbows flying right now. See? It isn't always about fixing a problem. Sometimes it's just listening. It's just caring. It's just saying, you matter. And what you think and how you feel matters. You know, there are times when we can't fix it. But even being there to share the load, to connect with them, that still goes a long way. And that's what being like Jesus is about. Throughout this month, we're going to see various examples of empathy. We're going to see some exercises of empathy that we can employ. I really believe this is an important skill that we should sharpen in our own lives. For as the Farmer's Digest once put it, when we put ourselves in the other person's place, we're less likely to want to put them in their place. Put yourself in another person's place. You're less likely to put them in their place. That's showing the heart of Jesus.